Good afternoon. This is KTOO, and I'm Clarice Larson. Thank you so much for tuning in. Juneau Representative Andy Story says she will seek re-election for a fifth term in the Alaska Legislature this fall. Story lives in Juneau and represents House District 3, which includes Gustavus, Haines, Skagway, Klukwan, and parts of the Mendenhall Valley, Auk Bay, and out the road. She's a member of the Democratic Party, a retired social worker, and served on Juneau's Board of Education for 15 years. She says she wants to continue serving in her role because she has some unfinished business to do.
There's still many things that we did not get accomplished that I'm excited to work on. I just enjoy the people I work with, so wanted to continue to serve.
Story says if reelected, her priorities as a lawmaker will continue to be funding public education, stopping out-migration, and creating new housing opportunities. Story, who co-chaired the House Education Committee, authored a bill passed by lawmakers this session that, if approved by the governor, would establish a loan forgiveness program for teachers. She also sponsored a bill aimed at stabilizing school district budgeting by redefining student enrollment counts. While it passed the House, the bill failed to advance in the Senate before the legislature adjourned last week. She says she wants to reintroduce the bill next session if she's reelected. She says both those bills and the others that she sponsored this past session align with her mission to make Alaska a place where people of all ages can thrive.
I think it's so important that we invest in people and people at all ages, from our youngest to our seniors.
Story is up for re-election for her seat in the Alaska House of Representatives alongside Juneau Representative Sarah Hannon. Hannon filed to run for re-election last month. Both Story and Hannon first took office in 2019 and, if re-elected, would serve two-year terms. This is KTOO. Good afternoon. This is KTOO, and I'm Clarice Larson. Thank you so much for tuning in. An 82-year-old Juneau man has been charged with attempted murder for allegedly stabbing his brother. According to charging documents, Juneau police arrested Arvid Williams Pustinen Friday afternoon in the Flats neighborhood in downtown Juneau. Police say they spoke with Arthur Pustinen, who suffered stab wounds on his arms, hands, and face. He told police that his brother said he was going to kill him, and he attacked him. Arthur was taken to Bartlett Regional Hospital. According to Juneau police, when Arvid was arrested, he said he was angry with Arthur, whom he lived with, and allegedly told Arthur he planned to stab his eye out. Arvid has been charged with one count of felony assault and one count of attempted murder. He's currently being held at the Lemon Creek Correctional Center. His next hearing is on June 3rd at 1 p.m. at the Diamond Courthouse in Juneau. And state lawmakers voted to increase state unemployment benefits for the first time since 2009 during the state legislature's race to finish last week. Senators attached the change to a largely unrelated travel insurance bill. If signed by Governor Mike Dunleavy, House Bill 302 would increase the maximum weekly benefit by $100 to $470. It would also triple the allowance for dependents to $72 per week. Future increases in the weekly benefit would be linked to wage growth. Juneau Democratic Senator Jesse Keel explained to his Senate colleagues shortly before the vote that the change would put Alaska just above the medium unemployment benefit. About 1 in 50 Alaskans got at least one payment in 2024.
This simply provides a little improvement to a system, a support that you really need when you're looking for a job. It keeps folks housed and fed. Certainly doesn't keep anybody rolling in it.
He said the change included in House Bill 302 would not require employers to increase their unemployment contributions because the accounts that fund unemployment insurance is already, quote, tremendously overfunded. An official with the State Department of Labor and Workforce Development verified that in testimony to lawmakers last year. Alaska's unemployment benefits would still be substantially lower than in many states, including Washington, which offers workers up to roughly $1,150 per week. Representative Zach Fields, an Anchorage Democrat, said the bumps in benefits would help Alaska retain construction workers and other tradespeople.
One of the reasons we've been losing skilled trades workers is they can't make ends meet, and in every other state in the Pacific Northwest, they can earn a lot better wages, recognizing that construction, oil, and gas is inherently seasonal.
The bill passed the Senate along caucus lines, 14-6, and in a wider cross-caucus vote of 34-6 in the House. Governor Mike Dunleavy has not said whether he plans to sign the bill. And several proposed mines in British Columbia are located along transboundary rivers that wind through southeast Alaska. Residents on the Alaska side of the border say there's a lack of tribal consultation, and some worry about pollution in salmon-bearing streams vital to the region's fisheries. KTOO's Alex Solomon spoke with Max Graham, a journalist who covers mining in Alaska for Northern Journal, about the booming industry.
Which proposed transboundary mines seem likely to open in the next several years?
Yeah, so there are a bunch of projects across the border in British Columbia of all stages. Probably the most likely to open next or soonest is a big gold and silver project called Eskay Creek, which is in the Unuk River watershed. And the owners of that project, they just got their permits kind of squared away and have an agreement with the First Nation on whose traditional lands the project is located, and that could open up within the next few years. There are a couple other big proposed projects, two in the Stikine River watershed. That's a river that flows kind of in the Petersburg-Wrangell area. Those are called Galore Creek and Shaft Creek. They're not quite as far along. And then there are kind of a handful of earlier stage, smaller projects that are even farther out and quite a bit more speculative at this point. So there's the new Polaris project on the Taku, like upstream from Juneau. There are a bunch of prospects sort of in the Hyder-Stewart area, sort of further south.
What's driving the mining boom?
With gold prices just being what they are, they've seen this like historic rise over the last few years, and that's really attracted a lot of investment and excitement in the industry. Copper and silver prices are also very high right now, but a lot of the interest in this region is still in gold. You know, at the same time, there's discussion both in Canada and the U.S. about critical minerals and sort of securing the nation's supply of metals used in energy and national security, like weapons. And so that's sort of feeding into the enthusiasm.
Last year, you covered the Eskay Creek project, a gold and silver mine revival proposed above the Unuk River that flows near Ketchikan. How have sovereign tribes on either side of the border responded?
That's on traditional lands of the Tahltan Nation in British Columbia. And that First Nation has an agreement with the province of British Columbia that sort of gives the First Nation a lot of control in the decision-making process. Whereas on the Alaska side of the border, that's just not the case. I think there's quite a bit of uniformity on the Alaska side about just asking for like the basic, you know, you need to consult us on these projects. Whereas on the BC side, there's, I think, more robust debate over like do the benefits that we're gonna get outweigh the risks.
It seems like there's an unclear path to resolve issues around transboundary pollution. For instance, the Tulsiqua Chief Mine has been leaching acid mine drainage into the Taku River watershed upstream of the Alaska border. What are pathways for issues like that to be resolved?
There's a debate, I think a very active debate on this side of the border about like to what degree there even is pollution or to what degree we should be worried about pollution. You heard the commissioner of Alaska Department of Fish and Game pretty much say like we haven't really detected any pollution on the Alaska side of the border from any active or historic mines in Canada. But at the same time, you have conservation groups and, you know, fishing groups and tribal leaders sort of very actively concerned that it could happen. And also huge attention has been given to the Tulsiqua Chief. If you go there or look at photos, like there is clear acid mine runoff, just like unfettered going right into the Tulsiqua River. Probably is worth establishing like what exactly are the risks. There's huge push from Alaskans to be sort of much better incorporated into decision-making and into the process of like shaping how mines upstream get developed. I think there's this more fundamental question of like, how do we mine responsibly and what does that look like?
That was KTOO's Alex Solomon speaking with the Northern Journal's Max Graham. And state lawmakers passed two bills on the last day of the legislative session aimed at fulfilling requirements of a federal healthcare expansion effort. One of those bills, House Bill 110, would make it easier for out-of-state doctors, physician assistants, psychologists, social workers, and EMS personnel to get licensed in Alaska by joining what are known as interstate compacts. The Department of Health told federal officials in its application for a share of the $50 billion in funding from the Rural Health Transformation Program that Alaska would join the various compacts. Alaska is on track to receive more than $1 billion from the program. Anchorage Democratic Senator Forrest Dunbar says that's the primary reason for joining the compacts.
This is the Rural Health Transformation Program bill. That's why these compacts are being done, because the administration committed to the federal government that we would pass or attempt to pass a number of these compacts.
The bill passed unanimously in the state house, but there was more controversy in the Senate. The bill passed 13-7 in the upper chamber, and in a rarity, all of the no votes came from members of the bipartisan majority. Joining a compact means subscribing to a shared set of rules for doctors, EMS providers, and so on. Anchorage Republican Senator Kathy Giesel, a nurse practitioner and the Senate's number two leader, said Alaska is a unique place and should be able to impose its own rules.
I don't want to give up that authority to look at these medical professions and what they can do in our state. We are the only ones who care about and understand our state's needs.
The bill would not have the state join an interstate compact for nurses. The compact faces much stiffer opposition, including from the state's largest nursing union. And a quick look at weather today in Juneau. It is 45 degrees and lightly raining this afternoon. Tonight, showers with a low of around 43 degrees. Tomorrow, showers are likely mainly after 4 p.m., mostly cloudy with a high of 50 degrees. And there are 5 cruise ships in Juneau today. The first one arrived at 6:30 a.m. this morning, and the last one, the Serenade of the Seas, leaves at 10 p.m. This is KTOO.